This was the worst thing that I've ever seen.
He intended to burn that whole house to the ground with everything in it.
Both of these women, there was nothing left. Pretty much completely carbonized.
This is like putting a giant puzzle together. It's one piece at a time.
You take a look at how a person lives, a lot of times it's how they die.
You know, it would take a maniac to kill a mother and her daughter in that manner.
A shocking murder becomes a dark mystery. The victim's body holds the key to convicting the killer. Every fiber is a clue. Every wound is a piece of the puzzle. In these cases, it's up to the medical examiner to find the crucial evidence and catch the murderer. This is Secrets of the Morgue. Newton Falls, Ohio. A small, all-American farming town with a big heart.
Newton Falls is a pretty nice community. It's a nice place to work, nice place to live. A lot of very nice people there. I would say it is relatively a safe community. It's not very often a major crime happens.
3 days before Christmas, that all changes. When the Newton Township Police respond to a 911 call at the home of Wanda Rollison.
The homeowner, there's granddaughter, Melissa Berry, had been trying to reach her and she couldn't. Melissa was very close with her grandmother, Wanda Rollison. In fact, they spoke on a daily basis. Melissa knew that she should have been home right after church. She noticed that her grandmother's car was in the garage, and she noticed some footprints that she did not recognize coming out of the back door. So she called the police department to come over and go ahead inside and see if her grandmother was okay. As soon as I got to the farm, I was met by Chief Tomano.
This area was very, very rural. I went with Melissa to the rear of the house. There was a wooden door with glass windows. I could see a glass pane on the window had been busted out, but I could smell like smoke. So I entered the house. As soon as I opened the door, I saw a huge pool of blood and what looked like drag marks going through the blood. I definitely knew it was a serious crime scene. So I tell Melissa, get back out of the house, go out to my car. I felt possibly we had a hot spot in the house. I called the fire department to check it.
The fire department had determined that the fire was extinguished and was no longer a threat.
They also confirmed that the fire had originated in the basement, in the furnace room.
When I walked in that room, I wasn't prepared for what I was about to see. At the bottom of the stairs, I could see a pair of glasses. And next to that appeared to be a work boot type print in blood. The basement was split up into two rooms. The room on the right was more of a sitting room. And I could see that there were drag marks on the floor in blood that appeared like a body had been dragged through that room and into the adjoining room to the left.
I've kind of conditioned myself. If it's not totally the worst thing that I've ever seen, I'm okay with it. But this was the worst. I see a pile of ashes. Big pile of ashes, large pile of ashes. And I see a human foot. I've seen a human body that was burnt in a fire, in a house fire, but never anything this brutal. There's a difference between seeing a body that's just burnt and a body that is totally like cremated. My main objectives was I had to get out. I had to get some highly qualified evidence technicians down there and make sure that nothing was contaminated.
Investigators need to determine how this church-going grandmother ended up brutally murdered. They turn to Dr. Humphrey Germanek, one of the most experienced pathologists in the country.
In forensic pathology, you explore the mysteries of death. And exploring the mysteries of death, you also explore the mysteries of life. My education began in 1973 when I lived in New York. I volunteered at the Manhattan Medical Examiner's Office, where I assisted in about 1,000 autopsies, and it was love at first sight.
We are very fortunate to have a medical examiner within our county that works closely with law enforcement. We all function as a team together.
Well, the first thing you do is you walk around the house, have a sense, grab a flavor for the place. A lot of times you take a look at how a person lives is how they die. So I go downstairs and see what I have. The first thing that I notice is there are four legs and four arms and two heads. Basically, it looks like we have a double homicide where two bodies were burnt in order to conceal the fact that it's a homicide.
At this point in time, they couldn't tell me who they were. I couldn't tell Melissa anything about the victims downstairs until we could confirm.
It can be an incredible challenge to identify a body that has been exposed to fire and to such a degree that major portions of their body are just ash.
Dr. Germanek takes what's left of the bodies to the morgue for autopsy.
You have to be very meticulous, very careful, very cautious as far as removing the bodies. You never know what evidence you might leave behind or what you're missing.
Identifying burnt remains, you have different ways you can do it. You can do it by dental records. Sometimes there is still flesh available, which will provide you with DNA. All of these things have to be looked at. It's laborious, it's time consuming, but it can also generate tremendous evidence.
Dr. Germanek starts working on the remains in the worst condition.
They were severely charred due to thermal injury. Pretty much completely carbonized.
Burnt into the remaining flesh, he discovers three pieces of jewelry.
There was a watch, and an engagement ring, and a wedding band that were very characteristic.
The jewelry that was recovered from the remains were used to identify the first victim as Melissa's grandmother, Wanda Rollison.
Wanda Rollison was a very religious lady, very well known in the church community in Newton Falls. Just about any time the church doors were open, she was there.
She had been recently widowed. She was a just a sweet old lady in the community. Melissa was very close with her grandmother, and she had talked to her often several times a day.
Dr. Germanic turns his attention to the second set of remains.
As far as the second victim's concerned, a lot of her upper torso was intact. Enough for me to photograph and document the fact that she had a gag.
You could tell that she had blondish hair, and she had a ligature around her mouth and wrapped around from her mouth to the back of her head.
All you have to do is lower the gag a little bit. I found she had dentures, and in her dentures was R. Claiborne.
Victim number two, Rebecca Claiborne, was Melissa's mother and Wanda's daughter. A mother and a daughter had been killed in a very brutal way. Taking a human life is bad enough. But to drag two bodies in a pile and set them on fire, that's about as bad as it gets. It's sickening.
Chief Tomeno breaks the news to Melissa that her grandmother, Wanda Rollison, and her mother, Rebecca Claiborne, are victims of a brutal double homicide.
When I had to tell Melissa that her mom and her grandmother had both perished in this crime, feeling badly is an understatement. I can't say the reaction was anything that I had seen before. There was a lot of remorse for Grandma. There was tears, a lot of crying. But for her mom, it's almost as if she had expected that something like this would happen with the path that she had chosen.
Rebecca Claiborne struggled with addiction for years. She ran with the drug crowd. She was always in trouble. She was always in the court system. Crack cocaine was her drug of choice.
Rebecca Claiborne was a very pretty girl. However, through the years, you could see her body was deteriorating. She was totally hooked. Melissa was not very happy with the fact that her mother was involved in drugs.
Detectives soon learned that Rebecca wasn't the only family member with an addiction problem.
One of the first things Melissa said was, maybe my brother had something to do with this.
Melissa had mentioned that Nathan, her brother, also struggled with addiction. And that some weeks prior had broken into Wanda's home and had stolen hypodermic needles.
So we wanted to locate Nathan and either confirm or clear him from being involved.
While investigators search for Melissa's brother, Dr. Germanic needs to determine how Wanda and Rebecca died.
In types of cases like this involving fire victims, one of the first questions you need to ask is, were they dead or alive at the time of the fire?
Forensic pathologists look to see if there is any element of smoke inhalation. And one of the things that we look for is cherry red discoloration. The carbon monoxide that is created in a fire gets breathed in, then binds tightly to the blood. And it changes the blood, it will have this cherry red discoloration. In a victim like Wanda, where the fire has consumed that part of the body, there is no way you can check for smoke inhalation. Rebecca, on the other hand, did have an airway. However, she was gagged, and therefore that prevented soot to be deposited into her airway.
There's only one other way to test for carbon monoxide.
It's difficult, but what you want to do is draw a carbon monoxide level from the blood sample. As far as Rebecca was concerned, the upper part of her torso was still intact. We basically tried to get as much blood as we can, and we had enough for carbon monoxide, and we had enough for toxicology.
Wanda's body is so badly damaged that finding intact blood vessels is nearly impossible. But after 8,000 cases, Dr. Germanic's needle skills are unparalleled.
Any good forensic pathologist knows how to milk an extremity or where the blood vessels are and see what they can get with a good needle and a syringe. What's going to be important here? How much do I have of sample, and how do I best utilize this sample?
The carbon monoxide test results come back conclusive.
If you take a look at Rebecca's carbon monoxide level, it was a 7.8%, which means she was dead before the fire started. If you take a look at Wanda's carbon monoxide level, it was zero, which again means she was dead before the fire started.
Armed with this new information, detectives hunt for the source of the fire.
Downstairs, we notice there's residue all over the basement floor around the area of the fire. It was very similar in color to dried blood.
Kind of looked like paint or wood stain of some sort.
Detectives wonder if this substance was used to start the fire.
Is it gasoline? Is it oil? Is it some other substance that hasn't been readily identified? It's the fire marshal's duty and function to take samples and to have those items tested to identify just what that accelerant is.
The investigators from BCI confirmed that it was dextane.
Investigators believe that the assailant covered the bodies in it, thinking it would annihilate the evidence.
I believe his initial intent was probably to burn the house down and burn the bodies up in the house. That didn't happen. You're in a basement, cement floor, cement block walls. Got wood rafters above your head, but the fire never got that high. So he used the wrong material.
We had went upstairs, and really, it wasn't in total disarray at all. One of the rooms had a jewelry box. The contents had been spilled out onto the bed. And in another room, there was a woman's purse. You would think that if it was a random burglary, they would have ransacked the entire house. And that wasn't the case. In fact, it was very little was disturbed. Somebody that was in there knew what they were after. When you have a run-of-the-mill burglary, there may be a physical confrontation associated with that, I can understand. But when you have two bodies in a pile and they were burnt, this is personal. Now we know that we're looking for a killer that went to great lengths to conceal his crime. He intended to burn that whole house to the ground with everything in it.
Detectives believe Wanda Rollison and her daughter Rebecca Clyburn were murdered by someone they knew. They finally tracked down Rebecca's son, Nathan.
Nathan was apprehensive about talking to us because he thought he had some traffic-related warrants. We explained that we weren't interested in any of these warrants, that we wanted to talk to him about the death of his grandmother and his mother.
Wanda's husband died the year before and had left her quite a large sum of money. And there was reports from people from Wanda's church that she broke down and was crying with one of her church members and said, "My daughter and my grandson are on drugs and I can't handle it no more. So I'm telling them no more."
Nathan, he admits that Wanda had been giving him large amounts of money on a daily basis to support his drug habit. But Nathan had a strong alibi. He told us that he had worked for a pasta manufacturer through a temporary agency, and that through this temporary agency, they have tickets that they punch, and it's all logged in the computer. He told us he loved his mother and grandmother and was devastated by what had happened. After we talked to him, we were pretty convinced that he wasn't our guy.
With their prime suspect cleared, detectives turned to Dr. Germanic for the cause of death.
I took over 70 x-rays on both of them trying to find anything that would be indicative of a gunshot wound, a stab wound. We were extensive. If they were shot, I couldn't find any evidence of that. If they were stabbed, I couldn't find any evidence of that.
Criminals are always learning. They're always studying the techniques and habits of other criminals, and they learn quite a bit from TV shows. And this has an effect in terms of improving the kinds of techniques they use to commit crimes.
In the absence of hard evidence, Dr. Germanic uses a tool that's taken 40 years to hone, his expert opinion.
If you take a look at Rebecca, the fact that she had lacerations tells me she was probably struck with some type of blunt object. She also had some blood on the brain, so again, we're talking with some type of cranial cerebral injury. I believe blunt force trauma was applied after the gag. So I've declared her cause of death, asphyxia along with blunt cranial cerebral trauma.
Melissa's grandmother's story, however, may never be told.
There simply was not enough left of Wanda to make a decision or diagnosis within reasonable medical certainty. So I've declared her cause of death as homicidal violence at the hands of another.
Determined to get justice for Melissa, detectives hit the streets, searching for anyone with a grudge against her mother or grandmother.
When you have somebody that dies by being bludgeoned to death, it was not likely done by a stranger, and it was done by somebody that knew both of these victims. And at this point in the investigation, we know that Rebecca Clyburn has a lot of associates that live in the drug world. It intensifies your investigation because they tend to shy away from contact with law enforcement. Several days later, we got a tip. So at this point, we're very excited. This tip was from an employee at a diner who worked with a girl that had said her boyfriend had been involved in a big crime.
First, we interview him and find out what the coworker told him. He says she was at the restaurant bragging about what her boyfriend had done. The coworker tells us that she actually pulled out Wanda Rollison's credit card and showed him that she had the credit card. We find out that the coworker's name is Amy.
Well, we learned that Amy Coral, she had a warrant, and we learned through the court of her address, and we sent officers out to her house to locate her.
Amy has a record, but until now, her crimes have been minor league.
So we track her down, and we pull her in for questioning. Now, at this point in time, Amy is a very, very viable suspect. So she is actually placed into custody.
We interview her for quite some time. And she tells us she has nothing to do with this murder, but she knows who was. She gives us the name of a suspect with the street name of Jazz.
Investigators keep Amy in custody while they head back out to find Jazz.
We've got our work cut out for us. When you deal with street people, everyone has a nickname. Nobody ever knows what anybody's last name is. You go crazy chasing these people down and trying to find out who they are.
When your victim is living a transient life, the people that they associate with are also transient. And generally speaking, they are also living a high-risk lifestyle. There may be mental health issues involved, there may be drugs involved, there may be alcohol involved, and it makes it a very, very difficult and laborious investigation.
Detectives start combing through murder victim Rebecca Clyburn's neighborhood.
I mean, we were confident that this was done by somebody that was close to her. So we started down around the apartment complex of where Rebecca lived. And we started running license plates down there and doing plate checks on vehicles. And ultimately, we come up with a Jasmine McIver as living nearby the apartment.
Detectives ask Jasmine if she knows either Rebecca or Wanda and question her about the night of the murder.
So we interview Jasmine, and she says that she didn't kill anybody, wasn't involved in any murder. She did tell us, however, that she gave a ride to Newton Township with her friend Rebecca Clyburn and some guy that she calls Maniac.
For investigators, it's the break they've been looking for. Wanda's house is in the heart of Newton Township.
We need to find out what she knows, who she took there, and for what purpose. And we need to find out who is Maniac.
Investigators believe a local drug dealer known as Maniac may be involved in the murders of Melissa's mother and grandmother.
Police departments in this area have files on nicknames, street names. And one of the things we do when we book someone into a county jail or into a city jail is we get all that information. That's all in a database. Jermaine McKinney was one that was known as Maniac. The guy has a tattoo on his stomach that says convict. And he had a long history with police.
We learn that Jermaine McKinney has a relationship with Amy Coral. She was supposedly pregnant by him. We know that Jermaine McKinney was also friends with Jasmine McIver.
And according to Jasmine, Rebecca Clyburn was also known to be the girlfriend of Jermaine McKinney.
If McKinney was associated with Rebecca, I'm sure he knew that her mother was financing her drug habit. So in my opinion, he wanted a piece of that. So he saw it as an opportunity to go out and victimize her and her mother to get this money. We got another tip by a police officer in another jurisdiction that this female identified as Kiata Riley had been talking to friends about this crime that she was involved in with a guy that she calls Maniac, AKA Jermaine McKinney. We make contact with her, and she agrees to come to the sheriff's office with us and be interviewed. Kiana tells us that Jermaine McKinney has planned to rob this old lady of $50,000 and asks her if she'll be the getaway driver in this robbery, and she agrees to it.
Kiana was a very volatile girl for us to interview because she had never been involved in anything like this.
We need to find out what she knows. We turned up the heat a little bit, and through our investigative technique, we were able to slowly extract the truth out of her. We had her understand, what her involvement was in this case, even by just driving them out there.
Kiana was terrified. She decided it might be best to work a deal, and so she started to cooperate. According to Kayetta, McKinney tells Rebecca Clyburn that he wants to go out to her mom's house in Newton Township to have sex.
Kiana and Jasmine drive Rebecca and McKinney out to the Newton Township residence and drop them off. Jasmine really didn't know what was going on. She didn't know there was going to be this robbery. So they go back to Jazz's home as instructed. After a short time later, they get the phone call. Jasmine now drives she and Kiana back out to Newton Township to pick them up. Kiana tells us that she goes into the residence and she sees blood all over. She told us that she had never seen a dead body before and that she was very upset by the sight of that. McKinney said he was going to rob her. He didn't say anything about killing her.
According to Kiana, McKinney lied to them all.
It helps explain what a horrible event these ladies went through. And it actually helps explain what a crazed maniac we were dealing with.
When McKinney comes out to the car, he has a laundry basket full of bloody clothes. Kiana notices that his boots are covered in blood. And she tells us also that he had a crowbar inside that basket that was covered in blood.
That kind of put the icing on the cake for us as far as the murder weapon for Rebecca.
It's a critical lead, but investigators want it confirmed by science.
The injuries that I found on Rebecca are consistent with being assaulted with a crowbar. She had multiple bruises or contusions to her face. She had a skull fracture.
Investigators question Kiana on the whereabouts of the crowbar.
They drive to an area in the city of Youngstown where there's a lake called McKelvey Lake. There's a bridge that goes across the lake. And McKinney tells Jazz to stop on the bridge. He gets out of the car and he throws a rug with a crowbar in it and he throws a pair of his boots that were covered in blood over the railing into the lake. If you threw something off the bridge, it would sink to the bottom and get swept away by the current or, move around. You probably would never find it again.
For investigators, that missing weapon is the best chance they have to get justice for Wanda and Rebecca. Detectives hope to retrieve the only piece of evidence that could put Wanda and Rebecca's killer behind bars.
My officers go out to the bridge at McKelvey Lake. They find evidence in that lake all the time. That's a favorite drop point for crime is to go across McKelvey Lake and throw something off the bridge. And while the officers are there, a member of the crime lab from Youngstown pulls up to them and asks them what they're looking for. So the officers tell them it's a crowbar and a pair of boots. The officer from the crime lab said, well, we found that yesterday. It's in our evidence room. What McKinney didn't figure is that in the wintertime, lakes freeze. So his evidence didn't sink. It was on top of the ice.
Dr. Germanic and his team set to work testing the crowbar and boots for physical evidence. If he can link the items to the murders and to McKinney, detectives will finally have enough to charge him.
You only have one chance at it. You have to be as thorough and complete as possible. You have to remember there's very little margin for error in our profession. There are innocent people in jail for crimes that were never committed. There are murderers walking the streets for free because of lousy forensics.
They test the boots and the crowbar, and they find Rebecca and Wanda's blood on them. On the boots, there's a DNA profile to another person. Because McKinney had been in trouble with the law in the past, his DNA and his fingerprints are on file. When they test the boots, they find McKinney's DNA inside the boots.
It's a stunning victory for Dr. Germanic and his team.
No crime is done in a vacuum. There's always something that is left behind.
Killers that use fire have this idea that by burning everything, you've destroyed any possibility of the investigation turning towards you is a very, very false hope.
McKinney was very careful to try to conceal as much evidence as possible, but he missed a lot. That's what burned him. That and pure stupidity.
Detectives search for McKinney.
It's an all-out manhunt at this point. We're looking for him. He's dangerous. We want to get him into custody as soon as possible.
We find him holed up in a house in Youngstown.
At this point, he's in a desperate situation. Officers try to take him into custody, at which time they were met by gunfire.
After a three-hour standoff with police, McKinney is taken into custody.
His statement was, "The only reason I stopped shooting is I ran out of bullets." That's why he gave himself up. I just thank God that none of the police officers got injured.
As Jermaine McKinney's trial approaches, investigators piece together what happened the night of the murders.
This robbery was in planning for probably a week or so before it actually had taken place. Jermaine McKinney had enlisted the assistance of Keota Riley and Jasmine McGyver. He told them, "You guys are going to drop Rebecca and I off under the guise of having sex." I think Rebecca went out there with McKinney with the intent of robbing her mother. And she hadn't any idea that either of them would be killed. I think he had sex with Rebecca, and he tied her up, he beat her with a crowbar, and he killed her. And then he waited for Wanda to come home. And when Wanda came home from church, he throws her down the stairs.
When she hit the bottom of the steps, her glasses broke.
And then he tried to conceal his crime by putting two human beings in a pile, dumping deck stain all over them, and lighting them on fire.
Dr. Germanick's expert opinion on cause and manner of death is a critical piece of the prosecution's case.
This case initially was a circumstantial case. Two bodies together, drag marks and blood, incineration. The fact Rebecca had lacerations tells me she was probably struck with some type of blunt object. She was gagged, and I had enough evidence there to say they'd be consistent with asphyxia. So you had a combination of those two things.
Jermaine McKinney is convicted of Wanda and Rebecca's murders. He's sentenced to two life terms without the possibility of parole.
That felt good. There's a sense of accomplishment that you've done something good for the community and you've taken a killer off the street and packed him away where he belongs.
You know, if anybody deserves a death penalty, it was Jermaine McKinney. To kill two people in the manner that he did. But it wasn't a unanimous death penalty verdict, so we gotta live with it.
Kiara Riley received 3 to 10 years for helping McKinney cover up the crime.
Kiara was a second in command for sure. She knew exactly why he was going out there to rob her. I mean, whether she knew that he was gonna kill them both, I don't know. But she could have walked out and said, you know, this isn't what I signed up for. I'm out of here. But she continued to participate. Jazz got pretty light sentenced. She really didn't know what was going on.
Amy Coral is charged with theft related to the incident.
Cases like this actually affect you. You never forget some of the details. You go to your grave with these thoughts. That's hard to take. But at the same time, there's a sense of closure that Melissa really needed. She needed to know that this part of her life is closed book.
It's a time of grief for everybody. You have to have compassion. You have to be kind. It's a scar. Never heal, never go away. But with each passing day, hopefully it'll get smaller and hurt less.